solve large, intractable problems.
It's a new venture altogether.
Your brain is a wild horse there.
Because remember, writing is not a team sport.
You are not selling horse carriages when there are cars.
I want to be known only as a trusted advisor.
More like a tourist.
Play to Potential Podcast.
Tanmay, thank you so much for taking the time for this conversation. But more importantly, thank you for illustrating the book, Play to Potential. Many readers said actually it was the diversity of how the information is presented which makes it interesting. One is, of course, the text. Second is the audio. Third was the visual. The phrase I use sometimes is, they say, picture capture. A picture is worth 1,000 words. In your case, your picture was worth 5,000 words, which was about the length of each chapter. So thank you for sort of bringing your creativity and thoughtfulness to the book. For the purpose of the viewers and listeners, Tanmay, I'd love for you to maybe introduce yourself with a specific reference to your sort of, if I may say, journey with sketchnoting and the work you've done in that space.
Sure. So first of all, Deepak, thank you for doing this, and I'm very glad to be having this conversation. A little bit about my journey. I started in software quality and operational excellence space, and I, you know, along the 20 years of my career in corporate environment, you know, I did quality, operational excellence, customer consulting, consultative selling, leading a large organization. And from there, in 2015, when I was at the peak of my leadership career, I discovered sketchnotes. Thanks to the work of Abhijit Bhaduri and Mike Rohde, I found this new way of expressing myself. And interestingly, I had done some preparation for my course in architecture when I was in school. So that skill of being able to draw things came in handy almost 20, 25 years later when I decided to pursue sketchnotes. And that is how my journey began. And today, I run this consulting company called QSpire Consulting, where I leverage my corporate experience and visual thinking experience. And I combine those two things to offer leadership development, change consulting, executive facilitation, and visual storytelling. And visual storytelling sort of underpins all of the other things that I do. So that's in a nutshell of what I do today.
You're being very modest, Tanmay, and you've illustrated for some big names. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the books you've illustrated for and sort of the league of people you engage with.
So I have illustrated some of the best-selling books. Where, you know, and my first book was in 2018. It was with Tiffany Bova. The book's name was Growth IQ. And that book went on to become a Wall Street Journal bestseller. A few years later, I did another book with Tiffany Bova again. The book's name was The Experience Mindset. And that also went on to become a Wall Street Journal bestseller. And what I did was I illustrated chapter summaries and some of the case studies. I also did some data visualization exercise, you know, in the book. I've also done Catalyze by Chris Shankar. I've done your book. So in all, my journey has now been 7 books strong. And, you know, many of them have been bestsellers, Wall Street Journal bestsellers, and national bestsellers like yours. And I think it's been a wonderful journey of learning as a book is being written. And also it gives me a peek into the mind of the author. So that's very interesting, that how people think about what they want to express and how does a book really come together. So I have a sort of first-hand experience of that process as well, which is fascinating.
And learning is mildly stating it, right? Tanmay, learning and co-creating, as you mentioned in, before we hit the record button. Because I find one of the pieces of input I got when I was writing the book came from actually Vinay Sitapati, who's written some great books about Narasimha Rao, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, and Advani. He told me in the context of the editing process, he said, you might think of editing as a trimming process, but actually editing is a generative process. You know, as you edit, you'll get new ideas. So similarly, sketchnoting, I would say, is not just an illustration process, but I think it's a co-creation process. I think, in a way, as we engaged, I felt I got clearer about what I wanted to say across the various visuals. But I wanted to pick up on one thing you said. 2015, you started about a decade back. Within 3 years, you had Tiffany Bova to work with, which went on to become a Wall Street Journal bestseller. That's a pretty sharp path to impact on a relatively new art form, if I may. So maybe just decode that a little bit, just that journey of how did she discover you? How did you end up working with her?
So for me, it was very simple. My guiding values when I started. So when I started sketchnoting, you know, I found a new skill. And the question I asked myself was, do I want the skill to be really a wandering generality or a meaningful specific? And then I realized that I want my sketchnotes to be a tool for people to learn more about leadership and learning. Primarily first for me to learn about leadership and learning, but then when I share it generously, for others to really make sense of it. And so the lens with which I created sketchnotes was leadership, learning, and change. That was my lens. So I was very focused on creating sketchnotes on timely and timeless ideas around leadership, learning, and change. That was the first thing, right? So I made my lens really clear about what I really want to use this for. Second thing was generosity, that I never holded anything back when I wanted to share. I would, let's say, create a rough sketch. I would just share it on Twitter. A few people will like it. Next time I will bring on some more sketch pens and marker pens and so on and improve my process. And that sort of continuous improvement was the third element. So, you know, clearing the lens, making sure that I was very generous about what I was sharing and not holding anything back. And third was continuously improving on what I was doing. These are three reasons why I think a lot of my sketch notes between 2015 and 2018 went viral. And, you know, people discovered my work, people shared my work, people like Tom Peters appreciated my work. And that's how I think the work really got traction.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love the fact that you started with values, you know, the why around sketchnoting before the what of sketchnoting and the generosity, you know, going back to Adam Grant and givers and takers, just sort of being a giver, eventually it sort of comes back. I think the way you said you relate to sketchnoting comes quite close to how I think about the podcast, the Potential podcast, which I started in 2016. And even now, I think there are many other podcasts where there are millions of listens. Mine probably runs into thousands of listens, to be very candid. But I think one of the pieces of feedback I receive is very often, what's useful often is the fact that I bring a learner's mindset than a distributor's mindset or a marketer's mindset to some of these conversations. So it's wonderful that you're able to bring that purity of intent in what you do. Actually, if you would indulge me, I'd love to maybe pick your brains on the creative process behind 2-3 visuals that you used in the book, Tanmay.
Absolutely.
The first one is actually, these are sort of in a way the three sections of the book, right? The first is about really understanding the various elements of why we struggle with midlife. The second is about how we build self-awareness inside out, outside in, etc. And third is the flavorful life that I talk about, which is how we can all lead a holistic, multidimensional life. But I love the visual you have for the first one, the long and messy midlife. Talk to me a little bit about this visual and also how you got here.
So, you know, midlife typically is when you question everything you've done in the past and you also question everything that you might do in the future. It feels like you're climbing up the slope. So I wanted to show that slope. I wanted to show the climb that is how it feels like. Like midlife is when we are looking at you know, and we look at the time as our scarcest resource, right? And suddenly midlife is when it suddenly hits that now I have finite amount of time to make a difference. And so I wanted to show the time element of it. I wanted to show the climb element of it, that it feels like an uphill battle. And I also wanted to show that it's also the time when, you know, you have kids, they're growing up, you have parents who are getting old. You have your own career. You are at your peak of your, you know, understanding about things. And it's all a lot of weight that you carry. So I wanted to show that midlife is the time when you carry the weight of a lot of different roles that you play in life. The time is running out. So there's an hourglass that I used as the weight. And then there is the person is really sweating, but still moving forward, climbing the uphill, battle of midlife.
Lovely. I think, as one of the people I spoke to said, in a way, this is also the time where you move from a current plus to a future minus paradigm as we look at our life. So this was really, it sort of captured so much in that visual. Moving to the next one, in the chapter on the meta skills to live a full life, holistic life, I talk about the notion of tightropes, right? Can you talk a little bit about this visual, how you came up with this?
Yeah. So when I created this visual, I really wanted to draw a tightrope, a person, you know, with that stick balancing on the tightrope. But it felt like there was a lot of tension and anxiety in the tightrope walk. I wanted to show the element of balance in how we approach, some of these contradicting yet complementing factors like performance and health, time and money, doing and being, optimizing and satisfying. And I felt like, I should show that balancing requires work. It requires you to align, first. You need to align the balance first, which is where the hand element comes in. The hand, there's a little bit of tension on the hand, but also that, you cannot let the balance skew on the one side. So if you focus only on health and not on performance, it doesn't work that way. If you only focus on getting more time versus not getting enough money, that doesn't work as well. So I think the key for me here was showing the balance between these contradictory and yet complementing forces that are at play when we are at the midlife.
It's wonderful. I never paid attention to the hand, actually. I focused on the two sides, but it's interesting. It needs a steady hand and a steady mind.
Absolutely.
To really have the right distinction between these things. And the third one is about identities, right? I think in a way, I do talk about the notion of not being a victim of our past and being caged by the identities that we are associated with in the past. Can you talk a little bit about this visual, where it comes from?
Yeah, so this visual came from the fact that, our identities are central to how we think about midlife. And especially when you're playing to your potential or trying to play to your potential, identities can really hold us back because, it is the time, midlife is the time when, you have, higher roles in the organization. You're typically, you have climbed the corporate ladder. You are identified as a certain label. And if you keep those labels very close to your heart, they can really inhibit your growth because then you are less likely to be open to explore new possibilities, explore the edges. And I wanted to show that shadows are there. But if you do not pay attention to the shadows, you can move forward smoothly. But if you let your shadows define you, then you will not be able to be creatively engaged in playing to your full potential.
Yeah, it's wonderful how not only are you bringing to life the message I'm trying to communicate, you're adding actually very often a new layer of insight and embellishing it rather than just describing it. And one of the things I talk about in the book, Tanmay, is on skill stacking and how we sort of really think hard about how to differentiate ourselves and uniquely stack the various skills, right? I think the point being, we might be 70 percentile in each of these, but when we combine them in a unique way, we become in the top 5% of the people that bring that combination. Can you talk a little bit about how you think about your skill stack? I think creator Scott Adams, right? I think he talks about the notion of skill stacking. How do you think about your skill stack?
So I think about skill stacking this way that, we have these explicit skills that we learn from outside, skills that we that we can gain certifications on, skills that are already established body of work. This part of the skill set is what I call the portable skills, right? The skills that you can take, those are the bridge skills. They will basically take you from here to there. And I think communication, clarity, the ability to see big picture, the ability to visualize ideas for me is that sort of portable skill that I can take anywhere. That's number one. Second is, I started my career with software quality and operational excellence. And since then, it has been a series of explorations that I've. So I engaged in team building. I engaged in customer consulting. I engaged in consultative selling. So if you look at it, I have full spectrum understanding of how business works. And that gives me a lot of understanding about what kind of challenges organizations and leaders face when they run transformation programs, when they drive change, when they make a big impact. What are their challenges is what I get exposed to. And that is when I combine that understanding with a new exploration like sketchnotes in 2015, I find new applications of sketchnoting. That sketchnoting is not just for me to record or document my ideas and share it with the world. Visual thinking you know, can be much larger than that. And when I discovered that sort of magnitude of visual thinking, I started helping organizations, teams, and individuals in sharpening their own thinking, seeing the big picture collectively, and really making that difference. So I think my concept of skill stacking is that when you learn a new skill, think about how that skill can add to what you already know. And, you know, and when we keep stacking skills one on the top of the other, I think at some point we find a unique combination. In my case, it was the combination of my analytical ability to understand customers' problems, organizations' challenges, leadership challenges. You know, if I draw a Venn diagram, that's the one circle, and the other circle being ability to express visually. So I think then sketchnote for me became a bridge skill. It was not the core skill, but now it's a skill that helps me across the spectrum of leadership development, change consulting, and facilitation, right? And so I think that when we stack our skills, only then we are able to find new combinations. And those new combinations will basically help us get to some point, which is unique. It's a new body of work that we are creating out of, and not really looking at only an established skill set.
Beautiful. I think one of the people I spoke to at the podcast, Rama Bijapurkar, the well-known, if I may say, marketing guru and guru on Indian consumer, she uses a phrase, the future will be much more about shaping the playground than mastering the sport.
Right.
So to me, shaping the playground to me is really figuring out your skill stack and really going after it, you know, with a focus. And I think the other thing that struck me, Tanmay, was I also believe back to wearing our identities loosely or sort of not being too tight. I liked the fact that you said sketchnoting and abstracting it to visual thinking, which is a slightly broader art form. You know, one of the people I spoke to, Ravi Shankar Iyer, who's come out with his own book on story rules, you know, he says as he was going through his journey, for a long time, he thought he was passionate about history. And he said, history is my calling, history is my calling. At some stage, he actually made the distinction that actually it's storytelling which is engaging for him. Storytelling that he experienced while studying history caught his attention. So actually, history was just one manifestation, but the broader synthesis was storytelling.
Storytelling.
And that suddenly opened up a new possibility. And he's one of the most respected storytelling coaches and facilitators around and authors around. So I wanted to sort of tease that out. It sort of came up organically in the way you described your relationship with the visual art form. A different question, Tanmay. I mean, you said each book that you sketchnote also is a learning journey. I'm curious about what you took away from sketchnoting my book. What stayed with you?
Well, I think, you know, more than the book, I would start with the podcast episode that I listened probably in the middle of pandemic when I was transitioning from a corporate role to an independent role. I encountered your podcast episode with Herminia Ibarra on working identities and how to really think of that liminal space between who you are and where you want to be. And I would want to acknowledge that that particular episode played a big role in how I see the transition and how I thought about my own transition and literally mapping the transitions in terms of what is and what could be. So I think that played an important role. Apart from, you know, what I learned about from that Herminia Ibarra episode, you know, I think the concept of internal and external self-awareness, I think really resonated strongly with me.
I think Tasha Urich was the person who said
Tasha Urich mentioned about, and in fact, I have done a sketch note on Tasha Urich's episode with Tiffany Boa as well.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
So,
okay.
So I think it's all sort of connects. The one thing that is a running theme in the book, which deeply resonated with me, is that most people live their life outside in. That what does the world need and how can I give it to the world? But very few people are able to think inside out, saying, what do I have? What is the gift that I have that I want to share with the world? What is my song? And what is the song that I really want to get out from myself? Most people don't think inside out. And I think the book really helped me think. When I decide today, I decide inside out in terms of not just a project that gives me money and other things, right? But will I be creatively satisfied doing this? Will I be a better professional when I do this work? And so on and so forth. So thinking inside out. And I think the third thing is the flavor framework, which essentially tells me very strongly that life is not something that you live by default. You have a choice at some point in time. you will have to build your choices and find the right balance between how much you want to explore and how much you want to exploit, how much you want to perform versus how much you want to sort of live. And I think the shape of what you want to do, what does that look like, right? So I think the flavor framework really helped me think from that perspective about how do I design my life rather than just living it by default.
Lovely, beautiful. I think if I might just build on that. And the third point I generally tell people is the flavor, the corollary to that is we all go through different seasons, right? Yes. And the flavor, just like we have flavor of the season in ice cream, the flavor of the season in our 30s is different from 40s to 50s because we Absolutely. Evolve, our needs evolve, our priorities evolve. So not to see it as a static answer, but sort of keep rediscovering the flavor and then sort of and being intentional about that shift. And the title of the book and the podcast, Tanmay, in a way, the mission that sort of drives me forward is helping people play to potential. What does the phrase play to potential mean to you?
So I think of potential not as a fixed label. That I think potential is a living possibility. And it comes when you find the courage to express yourself, when you are aware enough about what you want and how you want to lead your life and the impact you want to make. So I think the notion that potential is fixed is in my view, a faulty sort of an assumption. Potential is a living possibility. I think for me, potential is also about exploring ideas at the edges and finding new possibilities, finding our unique expression. Because I think just like the birds sing their song, right? Mm. Just like nature, everything in nature happens as a result of simple, unique, true, authentic expression that living beings have. Human beings have a unique song that they can sing. The problem is we are programmed in a very linear fashion from our school to college to corporate life, that this is the path everybody has to take in order to be successful and satisfied. But I think reading the book, going through the podcast, and going through my own journey of playing to potential, I feel like potential is about exploring at the edges and finding our unique expression, whatever that may be.
Lovely. Actually, that reminds me what I heard at the end of my first podcast conversation with Vijay Amritraj. Mm-hmm. As I was wrapping up the conversation, I asked him, what does the term mean to you? And he took me back to a moment where he visited Buzz Aldrin, the second man on the moon, his home in California. Mm-hmm. And he said in one corner of his home on a wall, there was a small quote which said, who said sky's the limit when I could set my feet on the moon? So to your point, I think it is, we think it's finite, but I think it's much larger than we believe it is. So Tanmay, thank you once again for really embellishing the book, adding to it, bringing your own perspective to it, and for sharing your wisdom in this conversation.
Well, Deepak, thank you for the opportunity to collaborate with you. It's been a great learning experience. Thank you for the podcast and the book. It's been a pleasure working on your book and learning from it. So thank you so much.
Lovely. Thanks, Tanmay.